On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, it is opening day. Smell the roses, feel the spring air. The bunting is draped from the upper decks. There are oversized flags in the outfield. And we are going to hold your hand and take you through all of it. 14 games on Thursday. We'll chat about all of them. We'll overreact. And then we'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Oh, what a beautiful day. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world on pace to go 81-81 after opening day. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And you crack those numbers, all right? You crunch them. Figure that out.
Hey. Angels would love to go 81-81 this year, but I am not liking their chances on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. We talk about the baseball season starting. Oh my goodness. Except for the Rays and the Rockies, who will begin on Friday afternoon. And if we weren't already excited for the George M. Steinbrenner debut for the Tampa Bay Rays, the opening day starter draft, friends, will come down to that game. More on that later. But Jake, we have a lot of baseball to talk about, so it's time to go around the league.
So I crawled out of bed yesterday morning. I put on a suit to dress up for opening day, and so did many members of the New York Yankees. Jazz Chisholm wearing one of the most fascinating pieces of clothing I've really ever seen. Shouts out to Jazz. I would describe it as like Boardwalk Empire camp. He looked great. Austin Wells in a three-piece Navy suit looking like he was going to rob a bank in 1929. It was good stuff all around. But I went up to the Bronx for a little opening day action with the Yankees taking on the Brewers. And there is something great about the Yankees playing the Brewers on opening day, being in attendance for that. These two opposite sides of like the baseball hype spectrum, respectfully, where it's like every single thing the Yankees do, there is a story about it. And then on the other side, it's like I needed to Google who Chad Patrick was when I entered the clubhouse. One pregame highlight that you will appreciate. I want to give a little shout out to Nestor Cortes. Nestor Cortes Jr., who was a member of the Yankees for a long time, traded to the Brewers over the winter in exchange for Devin Williams and friend of the podcast, Caleb Durbin, who was not there. So Nestor's in the visiting clubhouse, and a couple Yankee reporters roll in, and he answers some questions. And then as Aaron Boone's talks ends, this avalanche of people flows into the Brewers clubhouse to talk to Nestor. He answered questions, I swear, for 35 minutes. It was nuts, dude. It was nuts. So shouts out to Nestor. Big ups to him. On the mound, we had Freddie Peralta going against Carlos Rodon. And there was a lot of talk in advance of the game about Austin Wells, leadoff hitter, the first catcher in the history of the Yankees to lead off a game, to hit first. And that's bizarre because he's a catcher and he's slow, but he controls the zone and he sees a lot of pitches and he doesn't chase and he's aggressive when the ball's over the plate. And on the very first pitch he swung at, he hit it over the fence.
Yes, he hit it over the fence.
Barely.
He hit it over the right fence, I guess we will. Not the right field fence, the right fence, the correct fence.
As correct field.
The porch. Yes, the porch. The porch was the short porch was short porching real hard in game one for the Yankees. Anthony Volpe also benefiting with a nice little pop fly that landed into the seats a little bit later. But yeah, that Wells moment was awesome, right? I mean, I think that fun fact about them having never had a catcher hit leadoff. Obviously, catchers hitting leadoff is rare across the league. There are a few other teams that have barely had it happen in their franchise history, but for the Yankees of all franchises to have it never happen, both makes a ton of sense because the Yankees always have enough good players that the catcher is not necessarily needs to be the one at the top of the lineup. But it also kind of speaks to the strange state of their position player group, for better or for worse. And we've talked about how important Austin Wells is, and that was a nice start.
So those two solo shots give Yanks a 2-0 lead. Vinny Capra takes Carlos Rodon deep, 2-1 ball game. Yanks eventually pull away in the latter half of the contest. And then Devin Williams comes in for the ninth. Okay, and they're up 4-1. And this was a bizarre moment. So for Devin Williams' first moment as a Yankee, you're expecting this crescendo of energy. They just acquired a top three closer in the world. And what's it going to look like? He starts jogging out of the pen. And then they review the final out of the previous inning of the bottom of the eighth.
I totally didn't notice, or I missed that completely. Yeah.
So I think it was it might have been Volpe got thrown out trying to steal. Mm-hmm. And so they reviewed the bang bang play. And so as Williams is jogging in, they're playing like the organ music that they play to, you know, keep the crowd entertained during a review. And it's just, there's no lights, there's no video of Devin Williams. It's just kind of like everyone's waiting. There's a minute pause. Then they make the call and then they play the video and he's already on the mound. And it was just all kind of this disjointed start to that. And not that it mattered, but Williams was very shaky, loaded the bases with nobody out, held on for dear life, got his first save in pinstripes, and the Yanks won 4-2. What do you got?
I mean, 36 pitches, which just looking at this now is the fifth most he's ever thrown in a major league game and the most since 2022. I mean, yeah, it wasn't pretty. It was funny on the broadcast. They had Girardi and Bill Schroeder kind of, you know, representing the two sides. This is on the ESPN broadcast, by the way. Shout out Joe Buck. Nice watching him call a baseball game again. And Bill Schroeder's like, yeah, you know, Devin, he's not usually going to go 1-2-3. You know, he's going to walk some guys. And I was like, okay, well, but he's also not usually throwing 36 pitches. So it was building up to potentially a catastrophic finish, but they managed to get out of it and Yankees win.
Two takeaways. One, Jackson Chourio over 5 Ks.
Oh my gosh. What a day. What a day. Not just over 5 Ks. I mean, it was like, it felt like every single one after the first inning was like in a big spot, or at least the last few of them. He did pitch in. He did come up in that ninth inning. And yeah, it's 0-5 with 5 strikeouts only happens, even in this era where there's a million strikeouts, it only happens every, you know, 5 to 10 times a year. And this was a tough day after he hit 500 in spring training.
Second player ever to do this in a 9-inning game on opening day.
Congrats, Jackson. Yeah. Hey,
and then the other thing is for the Yankees, like, they got to feel good with Volpe and Wells being the offensive catalysts here on opening day. You can't read into too much of anything after one game. But if the Yankees want to be the Yankees for the next 4 years, not necessarily this year, but for the next 4 years, 5 years, Volpe and Wells need to be needle moving impact players. This season, I think they can get by because they've added Goldschmidt and Bellinger and Fried and Williams. And the Yankees obviously will always do things like that. But to have Volpe and Wells and also Jason Dominguez as this young group of up the middle players, once Dominguez presumably moves back to center at some point, like, that's kind of the whole project. In a lot of ways, it's so vital to their winning a title in the Judge Cole era. Like, Volpe and Wells have to be a part of that. So to see that on opening day was probably reassuring. Those two teams are off on Friday, and they will be back at it on Saturday with an awesome matchup of Max Fried against Nestor Cortez, the replacement and the replaced.
That will be fun. You will be there again. Now, of course, one difference between opening day this year and last year is that I was not at any games because the Guardians, who are my closest major league team are on the road for the first 2 weeks of the season, which means I will not see a major league game in person until April 8th. Let's do the Guardians now. Before we go to Atlanta, San Diego, let's talk about the Gardos. Got a little bit more bonus Gardo stuff later involving Tanner Bibee, who was scratched morning of. He's sick. That's not good. Fortunately, the Guardians might have the number one, oh, hey, dude, you have to start a baseball game in 5 minutes guy, and that's Ben Lively. That was essentially his entire season last year was, oh, hey, dude, we actually need you to throw 140 innings. He was like, all right, I'm game. Let's do it. Sounds good, man. He's great. I love Ben Lively. So he goes out there on short notice, and matches Cole Reagans for 5 innings. Vinny hits a big homer early, but the Guardians kind of linger
on that.
Oh, sure.
Vinny Pasquantino homer. That hit, dude. That hit so... Watching certain players... kind of exude the joyousness, the juvenile energy, the childhood love of baseball on opening day more than others. And Vinny, like the videos of him walking into the stadium and him like kind of hopping around the yard, like he just, it's like, well, Vinny Pasquantino excited for opening day.
And, you know, because he had a hamstring scare like a week ago, less than a week ago, towards the end of spring training, and it was like, oh, is he gonna be ready? And Vinny's like, yeah, I'm gonna be ready. So he homers, but the Guardians kind of get back in it. Then when the starters depart, Kyle Manzardo hits his first career home run against the lefty off of Angel Zerpa.
Zerp dog.
Manzardo, massive game for the DH from Idaho, as he has 3 hits, double triple homer, another big hit later on. But
can we workshop a nickname for Manzardo, like the big russet,
or, you know, I will pitch that to him.
How about just Spud?
I'm in. I don't know what his potato production experience is as an Idaho lad, but I will ask him when I see him on April 8th. Anyway, when the Guardians have a lead here, you know, going to the later innings, it's like, well, we know what this looks like. Time to roll out the big boys. We got Cade Smith, Tim Herron, Hunter Gaddis, and Emmanuel Clase, who made up one of the greatest bullpens of baseball history a year ago. And it was going well. Cade Smith, perfect inning. Tim Herron, perfect inning. Gaddis, you know, hitless inning. Great. Boom. All right, Clase, come on in and save it. And then I was like, oh, Clase. Ooh, remember when he sucked in the postseason? Well, guess what? He sucked again on opening day. Allows 3 hits. Blows the lead. We go to extra innings. And then the Guardians, the Kansas City bullpen was not particularly much better. I guess the main guys did their job, but once it got to extra, Sam Long coughs it up, Stephen Kwan and Kyle Manzardo with the go-ahead knocks in the top of the 10th. And then Paul Sewald, the new face in the Cleveland bullpen, ends up getting the first save of the year, which is pretty funny.
More saves this year, Sewald or Clase, who you got? Pick your
poison.
I'll
just say, I had some Class A bold predictions that I kept in the chamber to talk about Austin Hedges, but you know what? I hope Class A turns it around. That was not the most encouraging start, but Cleveland finds a way to win. Very impressive stuff.
Atlanta, San Diego, a rematch of last year's wild card round when the Braves, fresh off a sleepy flight, strolled into Petco Park and got shellacked in 2 quick games and was sent home.
Chris Sale available this time, though. Maybe that would help. Not really.
Having Chris Sale available generally is a good thing, although it did not matter on this day. Sale, a little rocky early. Not as rocky as Michael King, who... Here's how I would describe Michael King. It looked like before every pitch, someone grabbed his shoulders and like shook him for 20 seconds, and then they were like, throw a ball. He was wild and rusty, and it did not look good. He only recorded 8 outs, but the Padres bullpen kept them in the game. There was an early moment that really stood out to me, which was Jackson Merrill against Chris Sale. Runners on second and third and 2 outs. Merrill, 21 years old still, a left-handed hitter facing Chris Sale, maybe the single most difficult left-handed starter to face for a lefty. 2-strike slider like on the black, two balls off. And Merrill just stays with it and lofts it into center for a two-run single. And it was just the type of thing that most guys cannot do that, let alone children who aren't old enough to rent a car, right? Like, it was just a remarkable display of what makes Jackson Merrill special.
I mean, that at bat, like 97 fastball foul, 98 called strike on the black outer half. Like that slider in a two strike count, like that's Chris Sale. Like that's his whole, I don't want to say his whole career,
but it's like, but that's the plaque kind of in Cooperstown.
Yeah. Like that's kind of what he's been doing. His job and Jackson Merrill was like, that's fine. I'm good enough to handle this.
Bold prediction. The word slider will be on Chris Sale's plaque in Cooperstown one day.
Cold, right? Like cold. That's a cold prediction right there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Anyway, this one stays close. Very cool moment was Gavin Sheets.
Yes.
Who was one of what felt like 26 non-roster invitees to Padres camp. He makes the team, pinch hits, and in his first at-bat as a father, takes one deep and gone to center field in a pinch hit spot. That was sweet. And the Padres hang on to win. Tough first outing for the Braves for Hector Neris. Another NRI. 7-4 victory for the Fathers. I think Xander Bogaerts, a shortstop defender, is going to be a problem. He had a routine ground ball that he just took his time on, and his timing was off, and he just yeeted it. He's the oldest everyday shortstop in baseball at 32.6 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I am a little worried about the viability of that.
The question is, how many years on his nine remaining?
Correct.
Does he remain the shortstop? And I mean, it's funny because on one hand, I was going to be like, well, what else would they do? Well, they still do have like five other shortstops on the roster. Do any of them make sense to play shortstop over Bogaerts? I don't know. But the Padres find a way to win. The bullpen was magnificent. I think that bullpen will likely continue to carry them in a lot of ways. But yeah, to have Michael King not be able to complete three innings and still win this game was pretty impressive.
Yuki Matsui. Mm-hmm. Super fun. He's
underrated. He had a good season last year. He was good.
Good year last year. If you're a big nerd and you want to care about weird relievers, Yuki Matsui is up your alley. Just an undersized, energetic left-hander for the Padres. Let's do two more, and then I think we'll take a break. Mets Astros. I think this one had the most storylines to pick through heading into the day, because you had Altuve in left, you had Cam Smith first start, you had, it's not Minute Maid Park anymore, it's Daikin, you had Juan Soto showing up for the Mets, you had all these, you had Clay Holmes,
yeah, Pete,
right there, it was all this stuff. Hayden Singer, who made the team,
Brendan Rodgers, Astros debut. I mean, the place was buzzing.
It was buzzing. And it's a great reminder, dude. That place is so loud. It really is. I hate being like, that's a loud environment, because most of them are loud. But when they have the sound bouncing off that aquatic center ballpark, I mean, it really does hit.
It's an interesting environment. Our colleague Russ Dorsey was there. He wrote off this game. Russ was so proud of himself for correctly predicting that Juan Soto would go 1-for-3 with two walks, as if he doesn't do that like 50 times a season. But Juan Soto...
I predict that Jordan's going to wear a hat on next podcast.
Juan Soto, the moment was... So, I mean, the main thing from this game is that Framber Valdez was just... I mean, Framber's awesome, right? Framber also free agent after this year. Like, he could make himself a ton of money. He has been one of my favorite pitchers since he showed up on that 2020 team. I adore him.
Yeah.
And he's just a beast. He was one of two pitchers to go seven innings on opening day. And he's great. So that was the main story for the game. But there was a moment at the end. Juan Soto had a chance.
Sure. But there were just three quick early moments. First hit for Cam Smith, little dribbler the other way through the hole. Awesome to see that. Hilarious Altuve play early in this game, where a ball was lofted into like in between left and center. And it was very clearly center fielder Jake Myers' ball. And Altuve, like a bad driver, just cuts him off, runs in front of him, and catches it very nonchalantly. And it was just a great example of Altuve is in charge of the Astros. He is not in charge of the fly balls, right? The
he'll figure that out eventually.
As priority. And I would imagine there's an element of, like, subconsciously in Altuve's brain, he's like, I'm not listening to Jake Myers. I'm going to go catch this baseball. And it was a very scary moment.
It's like, because he wants to, his goal right now is like, well, I can't have this ball drop under any circumstances,
right?
Because that's what everyone is assuming I'm going to screw up. So anyway, but I know the fans gave him a good ovation when he went out there for the first time, and it'll be fine. We'll have he's going to have some ugly moments for sure. And as long as the Astros are still winning, and you know,
yeah,
I guess Brandon Rogers is playing well at second base. I don't know why.
Whatever, dog.
Over and Dubon, then, but yeah.
Soto first hit in his first Mets at bat, yeah. Like bank yeah. it easy. But you're right. This did come down to the end. We had Josh Hader coming in and looking incredibly shaky.
Same thing. Right. Him and Devin Williams both loaded the bases with no outs, I believe.
Yikes.
Juan Soto came up with a chance to do something big. And that didn't happen. He struck out.
Outrageously impressive from Hader. Goes down 3-0 to Soto.
Yeah.
I would love to know how many times Soto gets up 3-0 and strikes out.
Right. Strikes out. Not even just like gets out. Because I imagine his, you know, OBP within a 3-0 count is whatever, 800. But that's a great question. We can look that up later. But Astros take this one. Clay Holmes, he's fine. You could see it where it was like, oh, yeah, no, it's working. This stuff is great. He has enough pitches to succeed as a starter. He walked 4, struck out 4, pitched into the 5th, and we'll see. Like, it's a lot to ask of him under any circumstance. It is especially a lot to ask of him to have him be the opening day starter and have him kind of lead your rotation when you have these other question marks. So I'm not panicking, but yeah, it's, again, like, let's see what this looks like over 150 innings, because it is quite a big bet on Mr. Holmes.
That was Soto's 11th career strikeout after being up 3-0.
Wow. That is wild. Because I imagine if you have those splits, you can probably tell me how many plate appearances that is.
Excuse me. His 12th career strikeout. He had 11. And that is 369 plate appearances before yesterday.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a low K rate. So
I got to find that list of pitchers.
Credit to Hader, who gets the job done there. Let's do one more. Let's stay in the state of Texas. Talk about the Red Sox and the Rangers. This was an interesting game. We had Garrett Crochet's debut. We had Nate Eovaldi on opening day again for the Rangers. And Alex Bregman, of course, who was booed heartily by the Rangers fans. Of course, they still don't like Alex Bregman. Rafael Devers DHing. Alex Cora finally says, yeah, guys, it is what it looks like. Rafael Devers will be DHing. Alex Bregman will be playing third base. Christian Campbell will be playing second, the rookie. And Masataki Yoshida, never heard of him. He does not exist.
But I don't know him.
Star of this, sorry to this man. the star of this game was Willy Abreu. I love this for so many reasons. First little fun fact is that it was Willy Abreu's second career 2-homer game. His first also in Texas in August of last year as a rookie. But the reason why I love Willy Abreu kind of stepping up and being the hero, he has 2 homers, 3-for-3 with a walk, 2 homers, including the go-ahead home run in the top of the 9th, is that Willy Abreu is the perfect kind of player to kind of get lost in the shuffle on a roster like Boston, when you have all these star veterans and then everyone is so focused on that next wave, even though this guy was a very good rookie last year. But because he wasn't necessarily homegrown, I know they... What a trade. Shouts out Heimblum for him, for how they got him from Houston, I believe. And Willy Abreu was awesome as a rookie. I mean, he got Rookie of the Year votes. He won a gold glove. He mashed against righties. And he's a really good player that a ton of teams would love to have. And he's not someone that we like focus on going into a season like this for Boston. And for him to kind of remind everybody on a day, I mean, the rest of the Red Sox had 3 hits. So they needed all 3 of these hits from Abreu, and a pretty big win here.
They needed all the Willy Abreu they could get. He barely played in spring training. I think he had a gastrointestinal thing. What is happening?
It's a lot of people with tummy trouble. I'm like a lot, like all over the place.
Right.
Like, so, yeah, it's, this is, I guess it's, yeah, I don't know. We'll get to Mookie later.
MLB,
I don't know how much weight Willie or Abreu lost, but yeah.
MLB needs to do a deal with Imodium. It's like, look, boys, come on. This is a skill issue. Yeah, dude, two dongs, including the go-ahead shot in the ninth, three-run blast. You're right. Like, if Willie or Abreu is going to do this, the Sox are going to be really good.
They're in good shape.
They're going to be really good. Christian Campbell did not look good at second base defensively.
Mm-hmm.
He had a ball that he kind of bobbled and picked up and then threw, and that'll take a little bit of time. It's just a good reminder. Versatility is not always a good thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, offensively, though, besides Abreu, like, not a great day for basically anybody else. The Rangers only had one extra base hit. Rangers bullpen, which Robert Garcia, two walks in his first. Luke Jackson is, I guess, pitching in high leverage. Like, again, this was my concern. So we'll see if any of those guys end up, you know, pitching better. I'm sure some of them will, some of them won't. But Red Sox get a nice big win. And Crochet was fine. You know, Crochet, Eovaldi was better. Eovaldi looked fantastic. Yeah. But, you know, Crochet generally did his job.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will run through the rest of the ball games, do some sorry for your mentions, and overreact nuclearly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's fly through a couple more games before we apologize for your mentions. Cardinals Twins. So this one was delayed with a little drizzle in the loo. And then, so as I have been to Cardinals opening day as a former St. Louis resident, so I went to college. They do this thing, some other teams do this too, but they do like a truck parade where they drive the players around the outfield dirt and they all get their own truck. Apparently, Lars Nootbaar leading off got in the wrong truck with the relievers. So like they had a couple of relievers in the truck before him, and because he was leading off, like he was supposed to wait right there, right next to each other. Anyway, there was apparently a moment where he hopped out of one truck and ran and hopped into the bed of a different truck. That didn't end up mattering as Lars Nootbaar had a huge day, including a going yard as the Cardinals beat the Twins on opening day. Jordan Walker hit a ball 116. That's good to see. Was not in the air. Less good to see.
No huge shock there.
A hilarious moment here was Nolan Arenado, who got a curtain call. I am generally a St. Louis Cardinals fandom apologist. I enjoyed living in a place where everyone cared about baseball. That was cool. Their obsession with curtain calls is bizarre and hilarious to me. Nolan Arenado getting a curtain call on opening day was funny after he spent all winter actively trying to get traded. And I think the reason he's on the Cardinals is not because he went to his bosses and said, I actually would like to stay. It's more just that the Cardinals couldn't find a place to trade him. And I love that the fans were just like, he didn't leave.
To me, it's great because if he keeps having days like yesterday, he getting traded. There's going to be like, I think that's teams are wary of committing to a guy in his mid-30s whose offense has been declining, but he hit the ball very hard yesterday. So we'll see how that goes. And then, yeah, on the mound, I mean, Sonny Gray was slightly better than Pablo Lopez, and Ryan Helsley is one of the best relievers on the planet. So that's why the Cardinals won.
Cubs-Diamondbacks, a game that I admittedly did not watch any of as I got home from Yankee Stadium and was tired and wanted to watch the Mariners. What happened?
Yeah. Cubs D-backs. This was kind of a sloppy one. This is a pretty standard Chase Field box score, 10-6. Cubs win. Zach Gallen was not awesome. How about this line? 4 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. Interesting.
Wasn't that a Jay-Z album?
Yeah, perhaps. Nelson came in, who threw like 150 innings for them last year. And he, I guess, was the unintentional piggyback. He allows 4 more runs. Cubs offense really waking up in a way that they did not do in Tokyo against the Dodgers.
Jet lag.
And the D-backs, yeah, I mean, there was like really not much interesting here other than, so, I guess, 5 RBI from Miguel Amaya, who delivered the first RBI of the season in Tokyo. So nice to see him swinging it well. Other than that, the Cubs had some very good defensive plays. They had a ridiculous double play with Nico Horner's back in the lineup, so that was good to see for them. So Cubs look good. D-backs, Gallen, not super inspiring. But hey, cool thing for the D-backs. It's like, man, that sucked. All right, well, Corbin Burnes is pitching next. So that's pretty cool.
That's pretty rad.
It's a good place to be.
I am the low person on this rotation.
Yeah.
And yesterday made me feel somewhat validated. That's so funny about opening day, dude, because every little thing that happens, you're like, that's going to continue forever. Like, it just sticks in your head so powerfully in such a bizarre way.
Let's go to the Dodgers. The Dodgers, ever heard of them? They won the World Series. They went to Tokyo, won 2 more games. They had rather epic pregame intro.
May I quickly correct you? Corbin Burnes is not pitching next. They are like weirdly pushing him.
Oh, as they're doing. Okay. I apologize. So you'll get Corbin Burnes at some point. D-backs fans, that's on me.
He will pitch.
I just assumed. He will pitch. He will pitch at some point.
Will pitch, but bizarrely not in this series.
Okay, so maybe he's doing like the DeGrom thing where we're putting him in the 5 spot. So
best
pretty good 5
pitch is 5th.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Dodgers, Tigers, we get Kirk Gibson, first pitch to Freddie Freeman, of course. We get all the epic intros. We get Ice Cube is there again. All kinds of fantastic stuff for the best team in baseball. It is well deserved.
I got an Ice Cube aside.
Oh, sure.
Not a big movie guy. You know that. I recently watched Den of Thieves 2, Pantera, featuring Ice Cube's child, O'Shea. Banger of a film.
All right.
Just got to say, highly recommend if you need like a nonsense film with no stakes to put on in the background where there's like hijinks going on, can't recommend enough. All right, unpause.
Yeah, all right. That was quite an aside because that wasn't even about Ice Cube.
Hell yeah, Ice Cube. Dude.
So thank you for interrupting this opening day recap for that. Tigers, Dodgers. Snell versus Scooble. And for Scooble, this game pretty much went exactly as his last game of the season last year went against Cleveland, where it's like he's working. It's looking good. It's looking good. It's like, oh, that ball is over the fence. Last year, it was Lane Thomas against the Guardians. This year, it was Teoscar Hernandez and his big swing in the 5th inning to send the ball over the fence, give the Dodgers a lead, and remind everybody that he is back on the team, which is pretty cool. Pretty nice to have him back on the team. They probably didn't really need him, but he's there, and he continues to mash. Tommy Edman hits another home run. Shohei Ohtani hits another home run. This one, no doubt about this one. I know we kind of poo-pooed his potentially fan interference aided homer in Tokyo. This one was vintage Shohei. God bless Brendan Hanafy, but dude, like that's obviously going to be like you are asking for him to take you oppo if you give him that pitch, and that is exactly what he did. But Detroit. Not only did Tarek Skubal mostly look like Tarek Skubal, although 2 strikes. Snell and Skubal combined for 4 strikeouts. Wow. I don't know what the line would have been for that. That's something. Spencer Torkelson. How about this line? 1 for 1 with a homer and 4 walks. Oh, my gosh. I mean, this was like what he was doing at Arizona State. And now here you have him doing it at Dodger Stadium when at the start of camp, it was like, I don't know, he might be going back to Toledo. Look at Torque, man. That was pretty cool. Although, at the same time, the other part about this Tigers lineup is it's like, man, we got Manny Margot, who had a good game.
It's like, well, yeah, he crushes lefties.
Manny Margot, you know, he just signed like 3 days ago. Like, it's just so funny how these things work out where it's like, there was a few of these across the league where it's like, really, this guy's playing on opening day? Like, what are we doing here?
Cavan Biggio starting at first for the Royals. Yeah,
so we had a lot of questionable stuff there. But it was a good game, though. And the Dodgers bullpen did not look great, but they held on for the victory late, despite the efforts from Detroit.
So the Dodgers are now 3-0. They're the 21st team to win the World Series and then start the next season 3-0. Do they get to 16-0 and challenge the Miami Dolphins?
Good question.
From 1972.
I was intrigued that it's their first 3-0 start since 2016. Which again, like, none of this means anything, but I was like, for how much the Dodgers have been winning over the last 10 years, the fact that they haven't gone 3-0 in almost 10 years is kind of surprising. I mean, looking at their schedule, we got Braves, Phillies, Nats, Cubs.
I think they'll lose a game.
16-0. I think they'll probably lose a game.
How many games do they need to win to start the year to reignite the discourse? Like, if they start 10-0,
Is it down? I mean, has the discourse stopped? I think
I'm talking about, like, let's say the discourse is a fire. If they go 10-0, are we pouring motor oil on it? You know,
what we're like, it's like Manfred has to step in and like grant them a loss for competitive balance purposes.
Exactly.
I don't know. The answer to that is 30-0. I don't know. 25-0. Right. Dodgers win. What a surprise. One more before we get to our segments.
I'm going to take this one because if you let Jordan run through a Mariners game, it'll take too long. What?
You're such a hater. I mean, what a game this was. What a win.
It was a huge win.
This was a great game. It was a great game. It was a great baseball game is what this was.
It was a great ball game. Great ball game. And it started delightfully with Ichiro Suzuki at fantasy camp rolling out there in a full uniform, full kit wanker behavior to throw out the first pitch. He is being inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer. And Ichiro does not want you to see him in any other clothing ever. Is he buried one day in his uniform? Probably. Tune in to find out. They had an Ichiro radar gun on the scoreboard to track how hard he was going to throw. He threw the ball 84 miles an hour. He is 51, and I hate myself. The fastest I ever threw a baseball in my entire life was 84 miles an hour. And I needed an unhealthy amount of pre-workout at an independent league tryout to get to that number. And meanwhile, this guy's rolling in cold at 51 years old and just unleashing you know, men's league heat. So
that's
big
right.
Hat tip to Ichiro. Congratulations to him on the first pitch.
Logan Gilbert and Luis Severino were both spectacular. I am very high on Luis Severino, and he was awesome. It looked like a good pitcher pitching against the Mariners in Seattle. We've seen this game a million times. Logan Gilbert generally was matching him, allows a homer to Tyler Soderstrom. Two homers in this game from Tyler Soderstrom. Very important. Like, he is really playing for his job here because their first round pick last year, Nick Kurtz out of Wake Forest, is coming. He is coming for that position. And if Tyler Soderstrom isn't catching anymore and Brent Rooker is the DH, if you're going to be the first baseman for the A's, Tyler Soderstrom, you better keep hitting home runs because Nick Kurtz is coming. But he does exactly that. And the Mariners have some goofy stuff happen in the middle of the game that I don't need to recap. But then at the end, Randy, baby.
I would like to apologize just generally, internally, for underrating and overlooking Randy Rosarena as a character on this Mariners team. If they had traded for him over the offseason, I think the narrative would have been different.
Yeah,
I am somewhat concerned that the decline phase for him has already begun because some of those underlying metrics say so. Still, when he gets a hold of one, electrifying individual.
Jose Leclerc, one of the new A's relievers, comes in the
A's. He can give him up, dude.
He can give him up, and he hangs one to Randy, And my goodness, was this one punished. The cool thing about this homer was that it wasn't, he was a 111 exit velocity, and that was not his hardest hit ball of the night. So he had a 112.3 mile an hour line out earlier in the game. That would have been his max EV last year. So Randy's clearly feeling it already. Leclerc manages to give up another home run. Jorge Polanco, who has a big game in this one, hits the go-ahead homer. And Andrés Muñoz closes it out with a sweet double play from J.P. Crawford to finish it off. And Mariners win. So pretty cool. This is one of the few four-game series that we have this weekend. So they will be playing on Friday. I will give the full mop watch update on Monday.
Had a lot of shouts out to Aaron Goldsmith, Mariners broadcaster. Yeah. A number of Oakland references. That will take some time, everybody. Okay, that will take some time. I need to go back and watch.
First assignment for Goldie to be like, yeah.
And he literally on the first Soderstrom home run goes, and Oakland takes a 1-0 lead. It's like, no. I wonder if the A's broadcast said Oakland. Do you think they said the word Oakland once?
I mean, it's definitely worse for who, like Jenny Kavnar. And I mean, maybe. Probably.
Was the word Oakland said? I'm going to have to
depends
go back.
Depends how it was referenced, but who's to say?
I'll tell you what wasn't said at Yankee Stadium yesterday. Soto. That was a hilarious, and I tweeted this, and Yankees fans obviously got mad, but the hype video for the Yankees, like, we made the World Series. We were a good ball club, but you can't show how you did it.
How did you make the World
Series? How did you get there?
Was there like a big moment? Because normally you want to show like, that's why the Yankees are going to the World Series.
I was curious if they were going to have like the dugout reaction to the Soto homer, but not the actual homer. And they did not, which was funny.
That's great. Love that.
So, all right. So we have done all the games. We've now done all the games but five. Okay. Yes. All the games but five. And it is time to crack open the very first edition of this season. Sorry for your mentions. If you are new here, the concept is simple. When a team loses a game in embarrassing fashion, the mentions are funnier than anything we can say. And there were three catastrophes yesterday. One in Cincinnati, one in Miami, it was the Pirates, and one in Chicago. It was not the White Sox. Let's begin with those Reds. Early part of this game, Logan Webb, Hunter Green, both pretty good. Weird Great American Ballpark homers. Quick aside, Great American Ballpark, isn't ballpark one word?
Not for them.
Shouldn't it be just GAB and not GABP?
They have it as two words. I don't know how rare that is, but having written many games from that ball space park. You best be getting that right.
Okay.
But yes, Logan Webb and Hunter Green were both fine. Nothing too exciting early on in this one. But as the game is progressing, because the game is close and because the Reds do not have closer Alexis Diaz, who's on the IL with a hamstring strain, it's like, how is this going to go? They have Taylor Rogers, who they traded for from those Giants, his twin.
I don't even remember which one he is.
Well, he's the one that throws left-handed pretty hard instead of the one that throws sidearm, submarine, really, is what we're looking, the word we're looking for, a submarine throwing like 80 miles an hour. Tyler Rogers did pitch in this game. Taylor Rogers did not make it in. As the Terry Francona in his first game as manager rolled out Scott Barlow, Emilio Pagan, Tony Santian after Hunter Green. Those three guys were awesome. Those are probably, with Rogers, the three best relievers that they have. And then, for some reason, Ian Jabeau comes in to close out the game with a one-run lead. Ian Jabeau, who was pitched a lot for the Reds over the last couple of years, has had some injuries, barely made the team, basically only made the team because Diaz got hurt. You would think he would be kind of one of the last guys you would use in a leverage spot. For whatever reason, Tito goes to him, and it's a disaster, and he allows four runs, and everyone is very mad, understandably. Sucks for Ian Jabeau, who I quite like as a person. I enjoyed talking to him when I was in Cincinnati all the time. He probably was not expecting to be coming into a game to save it, on opening day. He did not get the job done, and Reds fans were not especially thrilled. Why don't you take us to the Reds mentions, Jake?
R.A. says, my day is ruined and my disappointment is immeasurable.
Immeasurable.
Nice.
All right.
JT says, new year, but the same Reds. Guess we'll try again in a few years to be competitive. Maybe my future children will get to see a good Reds team. Maybe not.
Here's one from Brandon.
Yeah.
A week's worth of summer attendance came to the ballpark today to watch this titanic struggle, only to see the Reds lose in the most Reds way possible. A cheap arm for a cheap team blowing it at the end.
Ooh.
Man, he hit send on that tweet and was just like, that was fire.
His phone exploded from the flames. Brian says, I thought we fired Bell. That was a David Bell move, bringing in a guy who wasn't on the 40-man roster to close. Expected better from Tito. And then my favorite response is from this guy, gonna stay positive. We had it till the end.
Can I also push back? That is not a David Bell move. Like, David Bell, he's doing stuff as by the book. He would have gone to Rodgers 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
But Tito's like, let me cook. Now, you have to point out, right? If this works, everyone's like, well, Tito, he's a genius. Duh. Of course.
He knows what he's doing. But, my favorite response, actually, is it's just an AI picture of Drewski in a Reds uniform.
Yeah. Some tough ones here. So sorry to the Reds admins, who I know, I like them. They're nice people, but this is a tough way to start the season. And I believe, do they not play today?
Ooh.
Let's see. Yeah, they're off. So they're going to have to sit on this one for an extra day, which...
Oh, this is great. Is when baseball players, one of their favorite cliches is, you know, one of the best things about this game is you go out there every day. You can get right back out there the next day.
Yes.
But sometimes you can't.
Yes. And that is a great transition to Angels White Sox. Angels White Sox, two of the worst teams in baseball last year. They finished the season with a series at the end of the year last year, or one of the final weeks where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe these two teams had to play each other.
And Rob Manfred said, run that back.
Run that back. We got to start the season there. Sean Burke, my guy, my hero. He does have a lower ERA than Garrett Crochet after he goes six shutty over the Angels. We get late home runs from Andrew Benintendi, who looks great. Andrew Benintendi was great in the second half.
I thought he was hurt.
He was hurt. He came back. I think he played like one spring training game like a few days ago, and now he's back. He's in the lineup. He hits a big home run. Lenin Sosa, who I quite enjoy, he hits a home run. Both against Ryan Johnson, who was making his major league debut after pitching zero innings as a in the minor leagues. He was one of their top picks last year. They zoom him straight to the big leagues. Why he stayed in to allow another home run, I do not understand, because the Angels did have an off day today. Presumably, Wansh could have put in some of the better relievers after Kikuchi, and they could have kept it close. But no, the White Sox explode for five runs in the fifth inning. They win 8-1. Unfortunately, they could not complete the shutout, as Cam Boozer allowed a homer to Logan Ohapi in the ninth. But the Angels lose to the White Sox in embarrassing fashion. And now, on the flips, on the positive side, the White Sox get to be undefeated for 48 hours. I mean, we love this for them, right? Like, Sox fans, live it up. This is great. Last year, you started 3-22. Now you're 1-0. You're tied for first place. I love this for the White Sox. As for the Angels, let's get to the mentions. Oh, I forgot a key detail here. I forgot the most embarrassing part.
Thank you, Jordan. Nicky Lopez, a position player, pitched in this game, recording the final out for the Angels. It is, as far as I can tell, the first time in MLB history that a position player has pitched on opening day.
God damn. I mean, also, Nicky Lopez just signed, what, the day before?
Yes.
That day of? I don't know. Anyway, it sucks. Nicky Lopez, awesome dude. Tough spot. God, the Angels. Okay, let's just read some mentions. I mean, this is just so brutal. We got just every... You can't draw it up any worse than this. It's so embarrassing. All right, what do we got? What do we got? Final, White Sox 8, Angels 1. We've got, of course... It's just the problem with the Angels mentions is it's so many memes and photos that have been used for the last 10 years.
Angels fans not are even so a whole good lot at of this.
Text.
Yeah. I got one. MLB TV outage was trying to tell me something. Jake we'll says, tough fight, boys, against worst team in MLB last year. Last year? Ever? Really had them on the ropes. At least it wasn't a shutout. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long season. Set the tone for a season. We are so back. We're so back, baby. We are so back. Fire Ron Washington. 40 wins.
Position player pitching in game one. Buckle in, people.
Thank God you got those pesky phones out of the clubhouse, though. All right.
True. All right. One more. We got one more. Sorry for your mentions.
Oh, yeah. One cool moment from this game was Tim Anderson back in Chicago getting a nice round of applause. Things have gone sideways and south and then, very quickly then, for TA7. Then,
yeah. Gets the ovation, yeah. Goes 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts, batting 5th for some reason.
How do we feel about him wearing 77?
I don't know. Well, I don't know, man. whatever you need to feel comfortable. I don't know if that is someone wearing a 7 on the Angels.
So here's the deal. We're going to do Pirates Marlins now. I really don't even want to apologize to the Pirates for their mentions. I too like the Pirates admin people on the social media world, but boy, this was the most, it could not have gone worse. Save for like a Paul Skeens injury, I think, on opening day. Skeens was awesome. Not super, super awesome. Like, he was very good. He was like 60% of himself. Very good for 5 innings. Would like to have him work a little deeper.
Yeah, back-to-back walks. You're not going to see that from him often, and that is what ended his outing in the 6th.
He allowed a first-pitch double leading off an inning earlier in the game on a ball that was a ball. On the inner half, and then an infield single, and that's how his first run scored. The Pirates, though, go up on a Nick Gonzalez homer that I think he got hurt while rounding the bases, which is Pirates as hell. A couple pass balls from Joey Bart, like total doinkers, help close the gap. O'Neill Cruz threw a ball 102.2 miles an hour from the outfield, but missed the cutoff man and allowed a runner to advance in his first, you know, kind of little extended stretch here in center. I know he played a little last year, but this feels different. And then the Pirates couldn't get outs out of the bullpen. Dave Bednar, hometown guy, was bad. And the Marlins walk it off at home to go 1-0 against the Pirates. Paul Skeens good. Losing the Paul Skeens start on a bullpen disaster. I mean, it can't. Sorry for your mentions. They don't deserve it.
No, it sucks, man. It sucks. On that uplifting note, we're going to take a break. When we return, give you a couple nuclear overreactions about Nats, Phillies, and Orioles Blue Jays before the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. That's our friendship. Let's overreact nuclearly. There is no better time to overreact than right freaking now.
One game into the season, baby.
That's where truth lies.
Nats, Phillies, Mackenzie Gore, Zach Wheeler. And here is my overreaction from this game, Jake.
Yeah.
Not only will Mackenzie Gore win the NL Cy Young unanimously, I think the Philadelphia Phillies will strike out more than any team in Major League Baseball history. They're on pace for over 3,000 strikeouts after striking out 19 times in the opener. The record, 3, of course. 000. Do you know what the record for most strikeouts in a season is? It's obviously
no, recent. I don't.
1,654. The 2023 Minnesota Twins. The Mariners last year came very close to that. Mariners 1625 last year. But this year, So far, one game in, and the Phillies are on pace to nearly double that record as they go down swinging, or I don't know how many of them were looking, 19 strikeouts in this first game against the Nats, and they still won. As the Phillies strike out 19 times, Jordan Romano looks terrible, and it doesn't matter because the star power was good enough for the Phillies. Zach Wheeler was awesome, except for probably the at-bat of the day from Keibert Ruiz, who hits a homer on, I think, an 11-pitch, 12-pitch at-bat. So that was really cool. But Wheeler was awesome otherwise. And the Phillies had some big swings from Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber. And then Bohm broke it open in extras. And then, obviously, the Nats bullpen isn't awesome. And so the Phillies just kind of out-talented the Nationals despite just, you know, looking terrible.
This is what they do, yo. This is how it goes. Yeah. This is the Phillies. Like, I don't. It was great watching Phillies fans watch this game. It was like, it's over. We're done. You know, pack it up. You know, burn it down. E-A-G-L-E-S, right? And then it's like, oh no, the second Mackenzie Gore gets out of the ballgame, Harper
literally,
and Schwarber.
I mean, within 2 minutes, they had the lead after Gore was out.
Yeah. Most predictable moment.
It was great.
Ever.
So, there's my overreaction.
I'm really happy for Mackenzie Gore. Like, he looked
man,
amazing.
Holy crap.
That was awesome.
He was fantastic. So, again, we were a little skeptical because we thought, again, the talent's there. But the numbers last year were not as good as you would think the way people were talking about him. But he looked fantastic. So, yes, that's my overreaction. Mackenzie Gore will win the Cy Young, and the Phillies will strike out 3,000 times this year. What about the Baltimore Orioles, Jake? I was loving this. This was great. Speaking of on pace.
So in 2019, Adley Rutschman, while playing at Oregon State, hit a home run at what was then Safeco Field off of current Marlins starter Max Meyer, then pitching for the University of Minnesota. And that clip of Adley disappearing a baseball into the upper reaches of a major league stadium, it tantalized, like, this guy could be generational. It's not just that he homered, obviously, guys do that all the time. It was the way that he moved, the power, the force, the zip, the freaking feeling of that guy. And my nuclear overreaction is that dude is freaking back. Adley Rutschman, MVP season is upon us. He goes yard twice in the Orioles 12-2 drubbing of the Toronto Blue Jays. And it looked right. It looked right. He looked explosive. He looked athletic. There was verve. There was it was back. The Orioles go yard six times. Two for Adley, two for Cedric Mullins, one for Jordan Westberg, and then one for Tyler O'Neill, who becomes the first player ever to hit home runs on six opening days. He has done it on six consecutive opening days. He's also the only player to do five opening days.
I think, I don't know if he had done four, but five was already the record, and now he's just getting greedy. I mean, this is outrageous. I mean, this is one of the most ridiculous streaks I can fathom for multiple teams, of course, in multiple stadiums. The Canadian does it in Toronto. I know he's not from Ontario, but still really cool.
And ridiculous because he's hurt all the time. And the idea that he's even been healthy for six consecutive opening days is kind of nuts.
Right. Like I guess he's always been ready for the start of the season. And then at some point, you know, in May and June, he goes down. So for now, though, we got to love it.
Now, Jordan, one of your bold predictions heading into the season was that the Orioles would be involved in 500 home runs, that they would hit and allow combined 500 home runs.
Yeah.
My friend, you are very much on pace as the Birds hit six, allow one. 493 to go.
They haven't even been home yet. I mean, we haven't even played with the you know, without Baltimore. I didn't even mention that they get to go to Steinbrenner. You know, more homers down in Tampa than in the Trop. So I'm loving life. I went low. I should have said 600. Let's see how this goes. Anyway, those are Adley overreactions.
The Adley hype right now, after he looked so good. gas down the stretch. I love it. That was perfect. That was perfect. Shouts out quickly to the Blue Jays in-game stadium operations crew. There was some fear that the beef between the U.S. and Canada would manifest and that the Canadians would boo during the U.S. anthem. But the PA announcer at the Rogers Center got on the mic and pre-shamed the crowd, saying this is a special day and we ask that you are respectful. And then instead of introducing the Star Spangled Banner, they simply said the national anthems. And then the singers, it was a Lion King Broadway performance, went right into it.
Wow.
No chance to boo. USA.
Hey, don't worry. Don't worry, Jays fans. 80 more chances to boo. Don't you worry. Let's go to the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's Friday. I know we're going long, but how could we not? It's still going to be shorter than Wednesday's pod. The good, the bad, the ugly. Something good, something bad, something ugly. And I am having a tough time deciding if my good is ugly or my ugly is good. But I'll let you start, Jake. Start off with something good from opening day.
Joe Buck calling a baseball game.
Yeah. Pretty cool. The voice. And you were there. You didn't even, I guess you had it on in the press box?
Oh, yeah. I had it on. Okay. Press box. Are you kidding me? I often like to have the sounds.
You should have just walked over there and listened to him in person.
I did see him.
Okay.
Seeing Joe Buck at a baseball stadium was great. One of my first, oh my God, I do this for a living moments was peeing next to Joe Buck during the 2016 World Series at Wrigley in the press box.
Absolutely.
When I was 20. It was like,
I remember.
Cool. That's great. But Joe Buck, who was really the voice of our childhood, every October, he did 24 World Series, the last being 2021. ESPN gave him Juan Soto money, not quite, but a lot, to call Monday Night Football games.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't do baseball anymore, but he did this one, did Yanks Brewers, and just hearing Joe Buck do baseball is great. I love Joe Buck. I am pro Joe Buck. I think his voice resonates. I love his tone. No shade to Joe D, who I think is great as well. But having Joe B back in the fold made my opening day.
Yeah, it was cool. And don't think that this is, we've been pro Joe. I know that now people are acting like, oh no, everyone hated Joe and now we're pretending like, no, we've been pro Joe Buck the whole time. That is a good one. My good this week, again, could be ugly. Did you see this Rob Bradford tweet about Christian Campbell?
No.
So Rob Bradford, of course, Red Sox personality, I should say. Rob Bradford.
Baseball he's got, is you know,
baseball,
boring.
Baseball. This is a great example of baseball isn't boring. Although this is hilarious. Okay. Rob Bradford tweets this about Christian Campbell. This is, I mean, I'm sure he's not the only one that posted about this, but this is where I saw it. He said that before the game yesterday, they were talking to Alex Cora about, oh, you ruined, you looked at this for yourself? Oh my God, Jay, you suck. You suck if you just look this up without me revealing this to you. Okay, well, Jake just ruined this whole surprise, but alas, too bad. Rob Bradford reporting for Alex Cora, who was talking about Christian Campbell, who made the team, of course. And Alex Cora said that Christian Campbell, when they went to Mexico for those preseason games, asked who his roommate would be in Mexico. And he had to explain that there are no roommates in the big leagues. So that's already funny. That's already great, right? Then Rob follows up with more hilarious Christian Campbell not understanding what it means to be a big leaguer, where it says, Campbell also said he didn't realize the team had its own plane. I'm putting this in good. This could be ugly for sure. I'm putting this in good because it's just so endearing and wonderful. To have a situation where a player, it really encapsulates the Christian Campbell rise because Christian Campbell, not too long ago, was essentially playing baseball, you know, for fun is a little bit of a stretch, but like it was not, this was not like, all right, well, I'm going to be a major league second baseman in a couple of years. he was just kind of playing in high school. He had redshirted, played at Georgia Tech, and then now it was like, boom. boom. And he got so good so fast, and just his athleticism and his makeup and his acumen for the task specifically, not for the world, right? A lot of people who would think about their future as a big leaguer, they're thinking about what it's like to be a major leaguer as the experience. Like, that's part of what they are working towards in addition to getting to play the actual game at the highest level. Christian Campbell has strictly been laser focused on just improving at this task, which is playing baseball, that everything above it and what it has meant, he has given zero thought to or never knew anything about in the first place. And I love
it's
that.
More, it's more than that to me. It means he's never been around a lot of big leaguers who are people who've been in the big leagues that he could have heard stories about the major leagues from. Go to AAA, if you spend significant amount of time in AAA, big league guys will come down and they will tell a story about a guy getting drunk on a team plane. Like, that will 100% happen. And he just never had the opportunity to hear about that.
No, maybe he did. And he was like, oh yeah, like, they come around and they offer you beverages. Drinks. And if you want, you know, alcohol, you know, you give them your credit card.
Did he think he was like carrying the bat bag onto a Delta flight? Sorry, JetBlue, Red Sox.
Oh my God. Anyway, this is great. Good. That's my good. What's bad?
Relievers.
Oh, I mean, we already mentioned a bunch of them, but what a rough day for you personally. This must have been a difficult day for you as a former reliever. You were just watching guys blow it left and right.
Every time a reliever gave up a homer, I was like a voodoo doll.
I feel like for you, it was more like the four-pitch walk. You weren't allowing that many home runs. I mean, come on.
So last year, relievers worked to a 3.97 ERA. All relievers. Mm-hmm. What did relievers do yesterday?
Probably a lot worse than that.
That is correct. Relievers threw 103rd innings yesterday. 103rd innings yesterday. They had a 5.74 ERA, allowing 64 earned runs in basically 100 innings. They walked 59 batters in 100 innings. Oh,
I'm just glad you didn't do an opening homers. Day relievers draft. That would have been brutal.
Oh, just relievers. Relievers. If you're a reliever and you're listening, shake it off, baby. And what's funny about it is draft. Like, it's the presumably the best relievers. Because
and the freshest,
like every good reliever is available. Because you have the best starters going, they're working deeper into the games. And so it's not as if you're going to get the underbelly of the bullpen. So good relievers were terrible yesterday.
Yeah.
Relievers. Sure were. Take a nap. Figure it out.
My bad this week was MLB TV not working for a long amount of time. I imagine this was a different experience for everybody, but MLB TV was clearly not, it was not working for, I want to say almost an hour. So people didn't really notice until the big slate of games started at 4 p.m. Eastern, because it was just Yankees Brewers on ESPN, and then Blue Jays Orioles started at like 3:30 or something. But at 4 o'clock, it was not working for a lot of people for, I think, an hour. And what is so disappointing about this is that for all of MLB's faults, what annoyed me is that a lot of people responded like classic MLB. Of course, they have this screw up. And I think some people mentioned this might have happened in 2023. So it's true. I don't remember that. But for the most part, MLB TV is one of the best things that our league does. That is one of the best things that they have produced. It is one of the best products. And for this to flop like this is just so, it's just bad. It's just, it's embarrassing.
It's bad.
It can't happen. If that happens on Saturday, it's whatever. You can't. It's like the 1 hour. You could not pick a worse hour for it not to be working. I guess maybe like the last day of the season if there's like five playoff races. But other than that, it's you could not pick a worse hour for this product to not be working. So that's obviously bad. What's ugly?
Do you know who threw out the first pitch at the Rogers Center for the Blue Jays Orioles game yesterday?
No.
Kevin Kiermaier.
Oh, I did see this. I forgot. Interesting. You think this is ugly?
I do, because Kevin Kiermaier spent how many years with the Jays? Do you know?
One. Two? One.
And a half.
1.5. Okay. Yeah.
He spent all of 2023 there and was good. He started the year for them last year and was terrible. Got picked up by the Dodgers, got a ring, and retired. How long did Kevin Kiermaier spend in Tampa?
A whole lot longer.
10 years. A decade. Now, Kevin Kiermaier does work for the Blue Jays as an outfield instructor.
Since he retired, yes.
Yes. But still, Kevin Kiermaier as the opening day first pitch guy in Toronto, either I completely underestimated his cultural impact up north, or this is just a bizarre one to me. It feels like the Jays, not that they're trying to steal Kevin Kiermaier from the Rays. Mm. Rays fans don't have a whole lot, especially right now. Let them have Kevin Kiermaier.
Yeah, that I agree with. That part I think I agree with. I'm not going to speak to how popular he is in Toronto because it seems like he's extremely popular and they didn't pick him by accident. But I do. It does feel a little strange when the Rays specifically only have so many long-tenured players and he's one of them. I think that that is definitely a fair point. My ugla this week is Tanner Bibee defending Chipotle. What do I mean by that?
Hell yeah, dude.
Tanner Bibee was scratched yesterday due to food poisoning. And people then started connecting the dots and they were like, wait a minute. Tanner Bibee is one of those baseball players. He's not the only one who is famous for eating Chipotle every single day that he starts. He said it on the record. He said it before. And everyone's like, oh no, he had bad Chipotle. This is what happened. You know, damn you, Chipotle. How dare you? You ruined our opening day starter. But Tanner Bibee, he would not stand for this slander.
No.
And he opened up the app and tweeted for the first time since December 9th, Tanner Bibee has sent a tweet and he says, stop talking about Chipotle tweets like that. Gee, tags Chipotle. Stop talking about Chipotle like that. I was sick before I could even think about a bowl. So good. I love this. He's like, guys, it wasn't Chipotle. I was sick before. He's like, listen, I would have had it. Let's be clear. I absolutely would have had it again if I was not having tummy troubles from something else that he's not naming.
But as a former Chipotle.
This is so great. Yeah.
As a former Chipotle addict, if you get sick, it is not Chipotle. It can't be, right? it's impossible because you're addicted. And so in your brain, you're like, well, it's got to be something else. At no point during his tummy troubles did Tanner Bibee ever think it was Chipotle. Whether it was Chipotle or not is actually irrelevant.
Yeah.
To doesn't whether
even,
or not.
It doesn't even matter if he had eaten it before. Like, he would never have blamed. He would not have blamed Chipotle no matter what.
He is walking back in there, scanning the app.
100%.
And crushing a burrito bowl. I will say this tweet has a little NIL energy in it to me. Seems like Tanner Bibee seems to be angling for a gold card or some perks.
I think he earns it with this tweet. I think this is a great sequence of events that he... I think he kind of earns that. So I is great. I'm excited to talk to Tanner about this when the Guardians are home.
Gardo's fans, don't do this. But figuring out which Chipotle Tanner Bibee goes to before his starts in Cleveland,
it's probably not that difficult. In fact, I can already think about which one it is, but I don't know for sure. Anyway, all right. Speaking of Tanner Bibee, let's talk about the opening day starter draft, our final segment of the day. This will be quick. Tanner Bibee was my fourth round pick. We drafted all the opening day starters, lowest combined ERA wins. I took Tanner Bibee fourth. He was scratched. Ben Lively pitches in his place. I take Ben Lively on his team. Ben Lively does great. Jake, I put out the tweet. I said, here are the pitchers.
People liked my team.
People liked your team. I put out a Twitter poll. Not a lot of votes, but 82% voted for Team Jake. However, going into the final day, which we didn't think we would have to do, but because the Rays are in their situation, they are playing opening day on Friday. Jake, it is as close as it can possibly be.
A nail biter.
And that is because nail biter.
My big dogs did not show up. Skubal, Skeens. Fine. Zach Gallen justified being the
you weren't feeling good about that pick at the time. Yeah.
You know,
but again, you went for the good pitcher strategy. I went for the matchup strategy. The irony is that my late picks ended up dealing. Mackenzie Gore dominant, Sean Burke dominant, Framber Valdez dominant. Those were three of my last four picks. Jose Berríos, my last pick, terrible, right? He allows the most earned runs of anybody. He does go five innings. So now, it all comes down to this. Jake enters the final day with a 3.68 ERA in 73 and a third innings. I enter with a 3.63 ERA in 74 and a third innings. He's got Kyle Freeland. The Kyle Freeland redemption arc is on a platter.
Lining
he
up.
Can, after he almost single-handedly lost you the contest last year, he can win it for you if he can outduel Ryan Pepiot, who is on my team.
It is legitimately bananas how close this is. Both of our teams have allowed 30 runs. Your pitchers have thrown exactly one more inning than mine.
Yeah. It's amazing, especially after last year was lopsided, and I think the year before also wasn't close in whatever direction it was. This is incredible. I'm proud of both of us for clearly delivering a very balanced draft, and now I will be locked in on this game, which when you're listening to this pod, it's probably going on, so you should know that there's a lot of weird stuff happening in this situation with the Rays playing at George M. Steinbrenner, but we will be most locked in on those earned runs. So Ryan Pepiot, bring it home for me, my guy.
Or don't. Thank you all for listening. Baseball is freaking back. I am so excited. The best part, Jordan, people always ask me like, hey, you just got married. Like, how's being married? And I love a cliche. I love delivering a cliche. You know that about me.
You do.
You know what's better than getting married, Jordan? Being married.
Staying married.
No. I don't like being I don't married. Like oh, I, see I don't like that saying. Energy.
Being I know married. What you're getting at. I know what you're getting at.
Being married. You know what's better than opening day? 161 more of these things. And I woke up today, and if there was zero games today, I'd still feel good, right? And there are fewer games, but I'm going to turn on that MLB TV, hopefully, and I'm going to take in even more baseball, and I'm going to do that for the next seven freaking months. It is so nice to be back. Thank you for potting with me. Thank you to Carter Singh for producing. Thank you to other producer Colin Brennan for his texts live from Nats Park yesterday. Some hilarious stuff from him. And thank you all for listening. What a joy. Yeah. What a joy.
Yes, this was great. Email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you guys on Monday. Goodbye.